you're hearing this before listening to the weekly show, are you sure you meant to do that? If not, stop now and go do that first.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
That was good.
Good.
Too many stories. That's excellent. It's the way it's meant to be. Too many stories. Such a relief when we've got more than we need. Man, it was so weird last week. Oh, there was one I wanted. John, to do on a little overflow for a little while?
Yes, a little overflow for a while.
All right, give me a second. I'm going to have a wee.
Is he gone? Hi, Discourse. It's just me. No one else is here. I've got nothing interesting to say. It's disappointing. I could take this opportunity to tell you all the terrible things about Morgan that he won't say about himself, but he pretty much offers them up. I had some good stories left. Guess we'll get to them soon. Morgan doesn't read his stories. He just copies and pastes them from Reddit and Metafilter. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. I read all my stories. I read them. I read them for you. You'll never hear this. Just the few people listen to the live stream, they'll hear it. They're listening now, but they can't talk to me, or if they could, I wouldn't listen anyway. So that's cool. I RTFA. Morgan doesn't always RTFA. Sometimes he crams it just before the show starts, but I read them before I even add them to the list. He's back. Shh. Nothing.
Did you read the fucking article, Dylan?
What? No. What are you talking about?
In the chat room, Adam ZNZ
did something. No, I don't know what they're talking about. I went away from the microphone. I didn't say anything.
You know I can listen back.
No. I didn't know that.
Nice monologue.
No, there was no monologue. So.
You've got to have the courage of your convictions. All right, so.
So the question is, has the overflow already started?
I tell you what, I just did back there. Ooh. Now, here's a story I wish I'd gotten to, but I had
you're talking about peeing.
Stories.
Next story.
That was a reference to urinating. The
here's
overflow.
A really but terrible.
You just went to the toilet.
Here's a terrible idea for you. Birth control for men edges closer. Developing oral contraceptives for men has not gone as swiftly as researchers imagined in the early 1970s. They suggested at the time that a male pill was not far off, but researchers now report a new way to make male mice temporarily infertile. Although the treatment is not ready for human use, the method avoids some of the pitfalls of earlier attempts. But the pitfall it doesn't avoid, Dylan, of course, is that men lie to women already about things like this. What woman in her right mind would believe a man who said, it's perfectly safe. Perfectly safe, love. No, you don't need. We don't need a condom. Don't need a condom, love. I'm taking that pill. That pill.
There are some who would say that women occasionally mislead and lie about these things as well. But yeah, at least
so much less likely because women need to deal with the aftermath.
Yeah.
Men. Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, of course, men also deal with the result of unprotected sex in an ideal world, but we don't live in an ideal world. We live in this one, a world in which people of all genders lie all the time to get their end wet, to get away a bit. It'll be perfectly safe, love. Don't worry. Well,
obviously I'd like, vaguely related. Sorry, just suddenly remembered while you were talking.
Yeah.
It's not in the story list, but guess what's just happened in LA? You might already know. I'm going to tell you if you don't. Even if you do, I'm going to tell you. Because the people who are listening might not know.
Yeah.
In LA, porn production, all of it.
Oh, I do know. I removed this from my list.
Has just shut down.
Because of the most ridiculous thing.
A syphilis outbreak amongst porn performers.
That is so ridiculous. But I understand syphilis is very easy to resolve. Maybe, is there a drug-resistant syphilis
it is
now?
The something? Problem is there's an incubation period and it can be worse for some people than others. But interestingly enough is that sometime soon in California, I think Los Angeles County specifically, there's a ballot measure that will require, well, that if successful, if people voted for it, a ballot measure that would make it illegal for porn producers to make porn in the LA County area, I guess, or whatever area it is, that doesn't use condoms. Basically, So you have to use condoms and porn. And this is obviously fed that campaign. It'll make it stronger.
It'd be very strange to see condoms in lesbian porn.
I think there'd be specific requirements for how and when they would be.
Well, they have to use condoms for blowjobs.
Right. Well, there you go.
Because there are some terrible outcomes for STDs in the vocal folds.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, really terrible. I mean, I seem to recall at school being told that oral sex was safer and that there were very few things you could catch. But actually, there's terrible kinds of throat cancers and so on that one can catch if they take a load in the mouth.
Well, this all sounds a lot less fun now.
It does sound unfun, doesn't it?
Anyway, so they're trying to crack down patient zero and test everyone in the industry and blah, blah, blah. But astonishingly, you think, oh, it's just the porn industry. The porn industry employs tens of thousands of people in California alone and in LA County alone.
Yeah.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah.
And, you know, not all obviously having sex on camera, but a lot of other people in the ancillary roles around the industry.
Yeah.
You know, accountants, cameramen, editors, hair and makeup people, producers.
Next story.
Does wealth make us more altruistic? Now, have you ever heard of a lost letter experiment? This is not a French letter experiment.
No, that would be...
That would be very convenient for
the previous story.
Now, lost letters, they were first used, I think, by Stanley Milgram, who is well known for psychological experimentation in the 1960s, possibly earlier as well. Now,
the heyday of psychological experimentation.
That's right. And his work is widely misunderstood. But we can talk about that some other time. Now, in this case, what was done was they dropped letters address side up with a gender-neutral name in the address, stamped and addressed, and on rain-free weekdays in different suburbs. 300 of these letters they dropped in different suburbs across 20 London neighbourhoods, which they then broke down by economic groups and, you know, possibly by others as well. And then they, the experimenter, just tracked where letters arrived to him and where they were dropped. So I guess they had some other markings on them somehow so that he could see exactly. Like all the red ones were dropped in Croydon and all the green ones were dropped in, you know, wherever. I don't have any idea about London. I don't even know if Croydon's anywhere near London. All the green ones were in the East End and all the pink ones were I don't even know, somewhere else. In the office. Whatever the office suburb was. Swindon, that's right. It's probably not London. It's probably some other place. Now, the difference...
All of the UK is London.
It's been decided that it's altruistic to pick up a letter and put it into the letterbox. Now, I don't know what the distance was between these letters and the letterboxes. Maybe they were directly adjacent. It doesn't actually necessarily say, but maybe someone can fact check me. I don't care, though.
I'm going to assume there had to be some effort involved. It wasn't just picking it up and putting it in the thing right next to you.
So if you divide it just into poorer neighbourhoods and wealthier neighbourhoods, and I'm sure that, you know, there's a big continuum, you know, with shades of, you know, different degrees of wealth. In poorer neighbourhoods, they got a return rate of 37%, which seems pretty good. I know that if I saw a letter next to a postbox, I would put it in the box. I don't know about you.
I would, but did
obviously,
you know,
it's wealthy,
how far, you know, would you cross the road to put it in the box?
Yeah, I don't know.
Would you walk around the corner to put it in the
box? I don't know.
Would you turn around and walk back the way you came to put it in the box?
I don't know. I don't remember if I've ever been in this position. And so in poorer neighbourhoods, 37% of the letters that were dropped on the ground made it to him. In the wealthier neighbourhoods, guess how many?
4%.
87%.
Oh.
Far higher return rate in wealthier neighbourhoods than in poorer neighbourhoods. I mean, vastly different. Almost like...
Totally thought this was going the other way.
I know. So, depending on how you look at this, you might say that wealthier people were more prepared to take a moment out of their day to help someone that they don't know out.
Without knowing more, it's very hard to say. I would have assumed a few things. One, that poorer suburbs would have more foot traffic.
Yeah.
Than wealthier suburbs. Actually, that's about it. That's all. But I would.
That would mean you'd expect to see more returns, because you'd expect to see more people walking past the letters. This is not the number of people maybe who walked so, past the expect, letter. This is the number of letters that made it back to him.
Maybe so, but you'd expect, you know, if 10 people walk past and the first one picks it up, and he's, you know, you've got maybe a 1 in 10 or whatever in 10 chance of a person who picks it up being a good person.
Yeah.
If only 2 people walk past it, you've got like a 1 in 2 chance of whatever it may be, that the more people the letter is exposed to, the more likely of a negative outcome, I would assume.
Our study attempts to understand how the socioeconomic characteristics of a neighbourhood affect the likelihood of people in a neighbourhood acting altruistically towards a stranger. The results show a clear trend, with letters dropped in the poorest neighbourhoods having a 91% lower odd of being returned than letters dropped in the wealthiest neighbourhoods. This suggests that those living in poorer neighbourhoods are less inclined to behave altruistically toward their neighbourhoods.
All right. Well, I don't know. It's an interesting study. I would like to know more.
I'll give you a little bit more. As well as measuring the number of letters returned, the researchers also looked at how other neighbourhood characteristics may help to explain the variation in altruist behaviour, including ethnic composition and population density. So that would be what you're talking about. But yeah, did not find them to be good predictors of lost letter return. The fact that ethnic, this is another quote, the fact that ethnic composition does not play a role in the likelihood of a letter being returned is particularly interesting. I'm not sure why. Someone's racist, I think. As other studies have suggested that ethnic mixing negatively affects social cohesion. But in our sampled London neighbourhoods, this does not appear to be true. The level of altruism observed in a population is likely to vary according to its context. Our hypothesis that area-level socioeconomic characteristics could determine the levels of altruism found in individuals living in an area is confirmed by our results. Our overall findings replicate and expand on previous studies which use similar methodology. We show in this study that individuals living in poor neighbourhoods are less altruistic than individuals in wealthier neighbourhoods.
Is it altruistic, or is it also honest and opportunistic?
I don't know. Well, I mean, of course, I don't think that we have a way of knowing if people open the letters. I suppose you could have a secondary thing. You could do this dropped letter thing, and inside you'd have a letter that said, if you're reading this, go to this webpage and we'll give you money.
Yeah, who knows?
And so then only people who have opened it will ever go to those pages.
Yeah.
So that could be quite interesting, you know, as a follow-up. I'm not doing it because I'm not a social scientist.
Next story.
Hey, Dylan, do you remember Auckland before the Sky Tower? This is not an ad, but it sounds like it.
I actually do.
Me as well. And on the Herald site, there's actually a cool little interactive image widget which you can swipe back and forth between a 1985 photo and a 1998 photo of the Auckland skyline.
Yeah, I was slightly annoyed by the by the specific dating of the photos, because you could have
It would have been nice if it was 1996 before the construction started, maybe 97, I don't remember when the construction started, and 2012.
Yeah, that would have been kind of cool. So you didn't have all the other thing is the photos weren't, the perspective wasn't quite matched, so
yeah,
it was lined up well on the left-hand side of the photo and not very well on the right-hand side of the photo, which is slightly annoying. But it is always interesting to see how things change. And I have, like, because in 1985, I was living on Waiheke Island, and we used to come over to the big city on the ferry sometimes. And I just remember, I have quite vivid memories of riding on the ferry. And as you come towards Auckland, there was all this, you know, building and all these cranes. And it was so exciting. It seemed like a very exciting time.
I tell you what, I was very nervous about the Sky Tower before it went up. But then watching it go up from my mother's house, my house in Ponsonby, my childhood home. Watching it go up, that weird stumpy thing that went up with, God, it was such a strange construction.
It was. I've actually got a bunch of photos. I was looking through a box of photos a while ago, and I found quite a few photos I had of the tower during construction.
And then I remember, and you know, then they finished adding bits on, and the spike went on, and other people were like, hypodermic, bloody blah, and I was like, okay, well, you can say that, but have you seen it at night?
Yeah, there was the hypodermic bloody blah, which was kind of, yeah, okay, it does look a bit like a needle. And then there's penis. It's like, it doesn't look like a penis.
It doesn't look anything like that. I do not want to see that person's penis, but I would like to show that person a normal human penis, because it doesn't look like a normal human penis.
No.
unless you have a very strange meatus and a long, thin shaft. Very thin. So I think that if that looks like a penis to you, you should probably not admit what your penis looks like, because your penis is a strange one. You may, in fact, not be human. I've got to tell you. You're not a duck, though, because then you'd have that spirally corkscrewy thing. And you're not a cat, because then you'd have those weird spikes. But you're definitely not a human.
So if you still had Ben on this show, if he hadn't been fired so ingratiously,
yeah,
or whatever the hell happened anyway, but nothing happened, he's just got other stuff he's doing, he would have talked at length by now in this show and numerously in previous about shows about app.net, which is an alternative to Twitter. It's kind of like, it wants to be kind is of like though? Twitter, except you have to pay to use it. Because, you know.
Well, it goes beyond that, because they used, Kickstarter? They used something else, didn't they, other than Kickstarter?
Well, they just sort of did their own.
It was similar to Kickstarter, but I think they ran their own page to do the kickstarting, the backing. I think that you needed to pay $50 to get in, is that right?
$50 for a year, basically, right. as a normal user, and $100 as a developer.
Did anyone in the chat room, did any of you back app.net? Did any of you back it? I did not. Dylan, did you back it?
I did not. And the reason I didn't is because Twitter's only valuable to me because of the people on Twitter. So I'm not going to pay money for not those people, if that makes sense.
Listen, bro, we both know that it's valuable to you because I'm on there.
Exactly, and you didn't get an account, so I'm not going to pay money for.
Why would you? I'm going to just remember where you are, and we can come back to it. I am subscribed to a thing called TimeHop, timehop.com, and it tells me every day about. Now I don't know how they select them, because it doesn't seem to be all of my tweets, but some selection of my tweets from exactly 1 year ago today.
Oh, cool.
So today I received some of my tweets from August 21, 2011. And it says, that was a Sunday. Helpfully, it tells me that. And then it shows a couple of tweets. And I seem to have had a bug up my ass about Torchwood, because my two tweets were at 12:57 a.m. Don't know what I want gone from Torchwood more. The endless humping. I get it. You're all edgy. All congrats. Or bloody Gwen. And then 1 minute later, actually, no. It's Gwen I want gone the most. How the fuck do you get rid of Vianto Jones but keep fucking Gwen fucking Cooper? And so those are the only tweets that apparently they decided were worth resharing to me a year later.
I did notice you reposted some thing you'd posted a year or so ago.
Yeah, I don't post. I've posted one, but I've been really excited to see several of them.
Do you know that?
So it's good that you told me. You know that? It's TimeHop. TimeHop Abe emails me every day, and I really enjoy reading my own tweets. I'm so good at Twitter. I'm the best at I'm the best at Twitter. It's too bad. It's too bad I've got so few followers, because no one knows how good I am at Twitter. That's solar powered. Solar powered battery charger out of a playing card. All you need is 15 other components. The playing card.
And one of them's a solar cell.
I mean, the thing is, if you say, I know, and all of the others are the ingredients that actually are required to make it work. It's so ridiculous.
The playing card just uses a backing.
Sorry, where were you?
To? Oh, Twitter. So anyways.
App.net.
Doesn't appeal to me because it doesn't have the...
Any
whatever.
Users.
It doesn't have the 800 odd people I follow on Twitter, and it doesn't have the... however many people follow me on Twitter.
You've got heaps of followers. You're very popular amongst the video editors and post-production people, aren't you?
Oh, exceptionally. But the point is that Twitter's only useful because I share, you know, because it's an engaging platform with people I'm interested in talking to, and people that I'm interested in talking to aren't on app.net for the most part. So
also,
interestingly, Twitter's trying to make app.net more appealing by fucking up Twitter. So that's good.
God, they've been trying to fuck up Twitter for a long time.
They do quite consistently fuck up Twitter, and they're now getting to the point where they're trying to get rid of third-party client developers.
Yeah. Which was probably a lot of the reason why Twitter made it big in the first place. It was because they had a really accessible API, and they made it really easy for third-party developers who were more talented than any of those motherfuckers at Twitter to make apps with really interesting interfaces and interesting additional features built into them.
And great ways of, you know, the great ways of, like the conversation feature that's in Twitter now, it didn't come from Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't, It used to, you'd have other third-party apps that were able to do that. You
could, neither did at replies, neither did hashtags, neither did all any of that other shit.
So it's there's a bunch of rules, but basically, among other things, they're limiting the maximum number of users. They're capping the maximum number of users a third-party app can have. That's current activations. So if you go to your apps tab in Twitter and whatever you've approved, you count as one of the users for any of the apps that are on there. So if you deactivate them, then they free up another space and someone else can come.
Fucking hell! So never deactivate anything you like, because you might not get back in.
You won't get back in. Well, that's the theory. It's kind of, given the backlash, it's hard to see if Twitter will stick with it, but they seem to be.
Twitter are a bunch of fuckheads who fluked their way into the success. If you look at what they were trying to build, it was an absolute dead end, and it was just by chance that they made Twitter. They had idea what they were making.
So they're struggling to monetize it is the problem. Obviously, Twitter costs shitloads of money to run. But none of us pay Twitter to use it.
It's really interesting. I've run, in New Zealand terms, if not in Trade Me terms anyway, in New Zealand terms, I've run some fairly popular websites. But, I never needed to have more than a web server and a SQL server. And so if you compare that to what Twitter or Facebook have, or Google. I mean, someone I think estimated, a friend of ours, Simon Lyle, former colleague at iHug and now working at NZ Herald, running their service.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, well, I think he's still there. Smart dude, knows what he's doing. Quite a good chess player, but that's all an aside. He posted a link to an estimate of how many servers Facebook has, and I don't remember the number, but it was like 100,000 servers. How the fuck do you manage that? And then
you got to also consider the way we use applications now. We've got all these applications that do, AJAX connections in the background. So, every 10 seconds or 5 seconds or every second or something, they're polling for more information. They're constantly, it's another page request, another request, another, response and all that stuff. It's astronomical.
Absolutely boggling. MySQL definitely would not be up to the task.
I probably wouldn't pick that as the basis for it. No, you need something serious.
Oh, I didn't mean MySQL. I meant SQL. MySQL, the SQL queries that I write. I actually use Microsoft SQL Server most of the time for my my main work sites, because I get to use the Microsoft SQL Server administration. I can't even remember what the client's called anymore, and it's so lovely for building queries. But it would not work for building sites that required the use, being distributed over 100,000 friggin' servers. There was a really interesting...
I was going to say, one other thing I was going to add to this, though, before you delve off wherever you're going. If you like app.net, you might also like ihave50dollars.com.
Yeah.
ihave50dollars.com. ihave50dollars.com. It's another interesting social service I think you should check out.
Yeah. So very interesting stats released by the BBC, because of course they were the host broadcaster for the Olympics this year. Now, have I found the right article? This is not one that I prepared. They released some stats on the number of streams they served, the amount of data that they streamed out. So for instance, on the 5th of August, the Serena Williams and Andy Murray tennis singles finals, Serena Williams and Andy Murray being the gold winners, I don't know who they won against, 820,000 requests, all right, okay, big deal. But at the same time, there were obviously a lot of other things going on. For instance, the athletics heats with Usain Bolt winning the 100 meter final, 344,000 requests. Apparently, they peaked at 700 gigabits a second. 700 gigabits a second of serving out video.
I don't even understand how that's possible.
They delivered during the live period. I don't know if they're still serving stuff because I haven't been to look. Although discos.nz/VPN, you can make yourself look like you're in England and you can go to BBC and you can watch the coverage. I was able to watch the streams using discos.nz/VPN. It was very convenient. It only cost me about $6 a month. The BBC delivered 2.8 petabytes. 2.8 petabytes. Now, I would love to leave that as a little homework assignment for people in the chat room, or you, Dylan. It sounds like you started typing. How many
Not for that.
How many is that in mega or gigabytes? Petabytes. That's big.
A lot.
That's really big.
Is a petabyte 1,000? Is a petabyte 1,000 terabytes? Is that what a petabyte is?
I think that's right. And that is one day. That is the single biggest day. That's not even the whole Olympics. 2.8 petabytes, 1 24-hour period.
So if you go to youtube.com/Olympics, which is the official Olympic channel of the IOC, during the Olympics they were live streaming to countries that allowed it. But now, after the event, there is basically seems to be pretty much everything there. You can watch all over again. There is a lot of videos.
So Kevin Long did the really simple maths. As it turns out, a petabyte's not quite as big as I thought. Approximately the 2.7 petabytes in a day is approximately 2,700,000 gigabytes.
That's a lot, though.
That is a fucking lot. That is a fucking lot. And that is only streaming to the Brits, because their BBC iPlayer, unless you've got a VPN, doesn't stream outside England, in Scotland, and parts of Ireland and Wales, right?
I understand, but that was the thing. So when you said, what was it, 700 gigabits a second or something?
Yeah, that's just there, but internally.
How do they deliver that? What must
the network look like? What kind of routers have they got? How do you deliver that much data? It is absolutely boggling to me. I mean,
how does the internet deliver that much data?
Right. Exactly. Excellent question. And we've both been working, you not so much lately. You've been in conventional broadcast the last few years. But for a long time, we were working in ISPs. I have no idea how you deliver this much data.
I don't even understand how the data backbone of the country.
It's so much.
It's
so big. And this is, I mean, we didn't hear any stories about everything else slowing down, did we? We didn't hear of people complaining that their friggin' their connection to what am I going to lie about? Something in the US, Netflix. We didn't hear about people complaining that their Netflix didn't work or that they couldn't get to Amazon Co. UK, did we? Didn't hear anything like that.
I wonder what the UK, I wonder if the internet was noticeably slower in the UK. Anyway, anything else? What else is there? What else is in the list?
Oh my God, so many stories.
I had another one.
All right. Let me.
Next story.
There's a simple one. There's a dude, right? He's gay.
A dude, he's gay.
His dad was quite rich.
Oh God, no!
He's got a kid.
Yeah.
This guy is married to his partner.
Yeah.
He has a child that was born of a surrogate.
Yeah.
His father died, and his father's will required that for his child to inherit the college fund, essentially, you know, the trust that was put aside for him. The man had to marry the child's father within 6 months of the child's birth. Child's mother within 6 months of the child's birth. So essentially, that he couldn't have them. This man's grandchild couldn't have his inheritance unless the gay son was married to the mother of the child.
It had already been
after 6 months.
But here's the thing: in New Zealand, it takes 2 years to get a divorce.
It's impossible. But it was just, you know, it's a condition in the will to try and make the gay son be straight. Stop him
what
from being gay.
A hateful old bastard.
Yeah, it's been challenging.
Why couldn't he just learn to love his son?
Because he's a dick. It's unclear to me what happened, because this was just about the child's trust fund. It's unclear to me what happened, whether or not the son actually inherited money anyway. I don't know how that worked out, but this was...
There's a $180,000 trust fund for the grandchildren.
Yeah.
I don't know that it says anything about what he had for the child.
No, sorry. So I'm talking about the child in this case, the grandchildren. So the dad dies, his son's children are the ones who benefit from this trust fund, and presumably, if you know, it's split, it's divided amongst the children. So there's one child, but that child isn't eligible for any of the money from the trust fund because that child was born of someone who is not married to the son.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's been.
This is from Gothamist.com, according to the story you added to the show notes.
Yep.
Here's the answer as provided by a commenter, and the problems as provided by a counter commenter. Step one: pick random chick. Step two, sign ironclad prenup. Step three, get married. Step four, inherit a shitload of money. Step five, pay a random chick $1 million. Step six, get divorced. Live rest of life pissing on homophobic dad's grave. And that was Donkey's Hotie.
Is Yeah, so that was a man who read the headline and not the article.
Yeah, which is pretty much what I'd do. Spirit of 76. Problem one. There's no $1 million to give random check. There's only a $180,000 trust. Problem two. That $180,000 trust is for the grandkids, not for the gay son and Hal H. Problem three. He's already married. This is ridiculous. This poor homophobic old bastard. How could he not learn to accept that his son likes men, loves men, loves a man?
Maybe that's interesting that we feel sorry for the man for not accepting that, the dude. Anyway, he's dead now.
I do feel sorry. I feel sorry for him that this possibly, probably, meant that he was alienated from his son.
Yep.
Now, I mean, I am actually alienated from my father, but not because of all the cocks. I'm, you know, getting down on with the gobbling action every weekend because that's actually not part of most weekends. But just because of things, you know, just things.
Because of stuff, yeah.
Just
sure.
Stuff.
All right, hey, one more, and then I'm done.
All right, let me...
Next story.
Dave Mustaine, you know who he is, eh?
Next story. Corrections.
I have no idea who that is.
Oh, lead singer of Megadeth.
Oh, yeah, all right.
During a concert in Singapore, he told the country, back in my country, my president, he's trying to pass a gun ban. So he's staging all these murders, like the Fast and the Furious thing, going down at the border. Aurora, Colorado, these people were killed there. And now the beautiful people at the Sikh temple.
Well, no, that's ridiculous. Under Obama, there's been no gun bans. If anything, there's been a relaxing. I thought that Obama had made zero changes or, if anything, relaxing of laws for gun control. That is absolutely ridiculous.
It's astonishing that people believe this, and the evidence is just completely.
I mean, quite apart from, you know, the obvious outrageous offensiveness of claiming that Obama had anything to do with the Aurora shooting. Even the simple part of saying that Obama is doing anything to do with gun control is just stupid. There are no facts behind that whatsoever.
Now, in the rest of the article, it also mentions this man, Dave Mustaine, was interviewed by Alex Jones. Do you know who Alex Jones is?
No, I don't. Oh, is he like the... He has like a culty YouTube TV channel?
Yeah, Prison Planet.
Prison Planet, that's right, yeah. Yeah, it seems reasonable if you only watch for a little bit.
Yeah, and then you watch a bit more. Oh,
and you go, oh my God.
So in his interview with Alex Jones, he says, with all the proof of its birth certificate being fake, and you see the signs in what? Kenya that say birthplace of Barack Obama. Hello, come on, guys. How stupid are we right now?
What?
Oh, there's proof that Obama's birth certificate was fake, of course. What? He won't release that something. Who the fuck is?
What?
People are crazy. And these people
are mental.
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 Oh, there was a I didn't put it in there. There was the head of a there's a GOP newsletter goes out, and I don't know where it was, somewhere in the States.
Next story.
Yeah.
You know, they mail out the newsletter to the Republican people. Anyway, the editor of this newsletter wrote an editorial, and in the editorial she said that if the if they couldn't vote out Obama in the coming election, they would have no choice but to have an armed revolt to overthrow this man who's the most socialist, an evil socialist leader unlike the world has ever seen, or something like that. It was just
these fucking violent lunatics.
It's insane.
They've got
that the
to
Americans
shut
don't
up with the armed revolt thing. That's not democracy.
No, they don't want democracy because democracy's been ruined by the something
by the socialists. Well,
no. It's all about voter fraud. The blacks and the gays go and vote more than once with dead names, and they need to.
But if anything, it's the opposite. If anything, the blacks are prevented from voting.
Well, that's how. Yes, exactly. That makes it proper.
These people are completely delusional. It is absolutely outrageous.
Yeah, no, it's freakish, and the problem is it's a vocal fringe, a vocal minority, but they are quite vocal and they are gaining support. People believe them. Mainstream, previously normal, rational political beings start to believe this shit.
Next story.
Bishops damn gay marriage. A letter to young people from Roman Catholic bishops condemning gay marriage has been rejected by other Christian leaders. The letter to Kiwis of Generation Y from all six of New Zealand's Catholic bishops advises against allowing same-sex couples to marry in the eyes of the law for the sake of society as a whole. This is no small matter, nor quibbling about words. This is an attempt to re-engineer the status and structure of family life in New Zealand, they wrote. 50 clergy and laity from Anglican, Presbyterian, Methodist and Quaker denominations lashed out at the Catholic bishops and called on them to reconsider their position on the Marriage Amendment Bill. We think it's time, this is another quote, do I make a sufficiently different voice when I'm doing a quote? We think it's time the church recognizes and encourages those in same gender relationships who wish to pledge their love and fidelity to each other in the rite of marriage, the group wrote back. So this is so exciting. This is like, in the left hand, religion one. In the right hand, religion 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Fight! You know what I want to say? Finish him! Kill those... I take that back. I don't mean kill. I mean defeat in a war of words. Defeat in the debate. Do not misunderstand me. I do not actually wish, even euphemistically, that anyone is killed. I only wish that these Roman Catholics would shut the fuck up. Except, you know, as their freedom of expression should allow them to continue spewing forth their hate and ignorance so that we can see exactly how stupid, retarded, and reprehensible they truly are. Was that clear enough? I hope so.
Yeah, that's good.
Bishops damn gay marriage and letter. I am an ordained minister in the Universal Light Church, possibly.
As am I.
We are both. We represent possibly the equivalent of one Catholic, Roman Catholic bishop. I don't know how the mathematical equations might work. I don't know where you would stand on it, but I would say I would be able to arm wrestle most of them, probably, I bet. Probably could lift heavier things. Probably can code better, I bet. Might even be able to, no, I probably can't drive better because I'm a bad driver. I bet I'm better at the sex than they are, though, except with boys, young ones, because those Catholics, they sure are good at child abuse.
Oh, yeah.
They sure are good at that and hiding it. Man, they're really good at that. So I'm really actually very excited about, I mean, because last week I was told off by one of our very reasonable listeners, who I'm not going to name for fear of embarrassing her. I was told off. I was told, you're better than this. I think, as I recall, I said something like, people who are against marriage equality are ignorant, poor, and religious. Which is not fair. The statistics said that people who are religious and people who are poor, no, yes, people who are poor, people who have lower education, are more likely to be against marriage equality. But apparently I went a little bit far in, attacking the religious side of things. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. And given that it turns out that there are a bunch of religious leaders, not just, you know, ordinary people in the pews. There are actually religious leaders who are coming out saying, no, listen, it's time. We have to recognize these relationships.
Look, it's worth considering.
It was unfair of me to say what I said. So actually, let's do it this way. Let's do it this way.
Corrections.
Religious listeners, I am never going to be as welcoming to you as I should be. You are probably a better person than I am. And I'm really sorry about that. I hope you keep listening. I'm sorry that I insulted your religion. I shouldn't make the assumptions that I make.
All right, let's go with this as well. There are a bunch of people who share your religion and don't represent it very well. And unfortunately, they taint our views.
That's probably the fair tone of voice to use. Now, it's hard for me to not go, these motherfuckers! And perhaps I should spend more time saying, maybe you should speak to your fellow churchgoer. And maybe see how they feel about it, and you know, have a discussion over nice warm cups of tea after your church service on whatever day, or synagogue, or whatever weirdos. What are some other things other than church and synagogue? Temple,
mosque.
Mosque is obviously not a weird one. Mosque is a very popular one. Circle of friggin' fairies in a bush. I don't even know what else there is. There's all sorts of places where you can go and express your misguided, imaginary view of how the universe works, which is clearly wrong, but I've already gone wrong.
Have you just... let's just abandon that.
Next story.
I can't even apologize right. Now, last week or the week before, I spoke a little bit about 3D printed arms that were produced for a little girl. She was 2 years old, 4 years old, and she had some birth, some sort of congenital defect that meant that she couldn't lift her arms properly. Her joints were kind of twisted when she was born, and the surgeon straightened her out, but she didn't have the muscle tone to use her arms. And they 3D printed this kind of miniaturized, lightweight version of a large metal kind of exoskeleton, which is used for adults usually. And it meant that she was able to play, which was absolutely incredible. Now, this week, we've seen a story about a Chinese farmer who, it's absolutely outrageous. He lost his hands anyway. But the way he lost his hands is sort of tragicomic. He was making bombs for fishing with.
Okay, I mean, nothing.
I mean, this is the most outrageous sort of redneck thing. I seem to recall that Crocodile Dundee did this, like sitting in a dinghy dropping dynamite into, maybe it was in New York. I guess it's rivers. Is it rivers around New York? Is it the sea?
Yeah.
Anyway, rivers. They're islands in a stream, I think, probably. Anyway, this guy was preparing to do that, but something went wrong, and the bomb he was making blew up in his hands and took his hands off.
Whoops.
He is a very poor man. He is a farmer in China. China is huge and relatively wealthy, but that doesn't mean that all of the billion and a half or whatever citizens are wealthy. Many Chinese, this might come as a shock to some of our listeners, many Chinese people are not wealthy. And as it turns out, communism is not necessarily the most caring way to run a country. He was pretty much on his own. But so what he did with no hands is make his own prosthetics, his own bionic replacement hands, including, you know, mechanisms that use the movement of his elbows to open and close the fingers. Pretty sophisticated stuff. But wouldn't it be even better if we could combine last week's story with this guy's ingenuity? We could have 3D printers around the place that make, you know, custom-built, custom-fitted prosthetics for people who, at the moment, can't afford them, because he's made his out of, as I think he's made them out of iron, and he says that when it's cold they're extremely cold, they're very heavy, and when it's hot they're terribly hot. And so wouldn't it be much better if they were made out of, you know, nylon or something, you know, something strong but lightweight that it's easy to extrude and to print into 3D components. I'm sure that he's very happy with his, you know, what he's built with his own two stumps. But maybe we could all get together and figure out a way to make better versions of these hands and other body parts for him and for many other people around the world. Perhaps the nerds amongst us could spend a little bit of time thinking about how to answer, to solve these actual difficult problems that make a huge difference to many people around the world's lives, rather than printing fucking trifling little logos and, you know, parts for irrelevant crap that, you know, we should probably not bother with. Any thoughts?
I wasn't listening to most of it.
Fair enough. I'll put this in the save for later pile. And
next story.
Have you heard? Do you know what a mazer is?
No.
Yeah, me neither. I've got no idea. But the first practical mazer was put together with crap from eBay. Now, mazers apparently were theorized and started work on perhaps before even lasers, which we're now all very familiar with. I mean, we've just started shooting Mars with a laser off the... I say we, but of course, you know, the American physicists and engineers who actually built the Curiosity. They've just started shooting Mars with a laser. That's very exciting. We've all seen little laser pointers. Very exciting things. I mean, all the fiber optic stuff that is used to make really fast internet, it's all lasers. You know, lasers, it's done. But, you know, they were invented essentially in the 1960s, not really a long time ago. Mazers do a similar job, but with microwaves rather than with photons. So they are apparently, perhaps, useful for communications and astronomy and things like that. But they were huge. They were used, I think, on some satellites. But because they are big and they operate at high temperatures and they're very weak, you know, they're not much use. But then a Japanese chap published in an article or on a webpage, who knows where. It's probably in the article somewhere, but I can barely see through the fog of scrumpy cider that I'm trying to look at my screen through. This Japanese chap published that he theorized that if you use this particular kind of crystal, perhaps. This a crystal made of pentosine. There you go. If you excited that with a laser, it might go into a metastable state. You could fire, then, a microwave through the crystal, and they'd drop out of that state, releasing microwaves of the same wavelength. So basically, a laser with microwaves. It's called a maser. So this chap, Mark Oxborough, who's a physicist at the UK National Physical Laboratory, so just, you know, your home-based tinkerer, probably. Physicist at the UK National Physical Laboratory, probably pretty good at what he does. But he made one of these crystals. And he says he managed to screw it up, describing the crystal as singed. He then bought an old laser off eBay and put it in his lab. And then one night, or perhaps day, he had an argument with his wife and he was really upset. So he went to his lab to blow off steam and decided to try the thing out. And guess what? He made a maser that was 100 million times as powerful as existing masers and operates at room temperature. 100 million times as powerful.
Excellent.
That's really much better. Now, they can't say exactly what this thing's going to be used for because I don't know what you think about when you think of mazes, but I don't think about, you know, people in presentations pointing at the projector screen and saying that.
No, I use it to blind aircraft parts.
but well, whatever it is you do with a maser, now there are practical ones. And this guy made it partially with shit that he bought off the internet. So there's hope for all of us. Just as long as you're a physicist. Really highly educated and qualified.
Yeah. Oh, seems good.
Next story.
Oh. Can't take much more.
Wet dogs can shake dry in milliseconds. It's true. Researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology used high-speed videography and fur particle tracking. Someone invented that, fur particle tracking, to characterize the shakes of 33 different animals, 16 species, and 5 dog breeds at Zoo Atlanta. Understanding the physics of the wet dog shake could help engineers recreate the optimal oscillation frequency and use it to improve the efficiency of washing machines, dryers, painting devices, spin coaters, and other machines. We hope the findings from our research will contribute to technology that can harness these efficient and quick capabilities of drying seen in nature, says some guy. It may even lead to improved functioning for robotics, such as the Mars rover, which suffered reduced power from the accumulation of dust on its solar panels. Well, you know how they solved that. They used plutonium that they bought from the Russians, which was surplus to their weapons programs. That's how they solved that problem. They didn't need any shaking dogs at all. Not quite as interesting, though. Can you imagine a solar panel that shakes itself like a dog?
Would it have fur?
I don't know. It would be cool if it did. Well, if it had fur, it would be more likely to gather even more dust, surely.
Well, also a lot harder to gather, you know, solar radiation.
In the future, self-cleaning and self-drying may arise as an important capability for cameras and other equipment subject to wet.
Okay, so the gist of this article is shaking things makes them dry. Is that what you're getting at?
Apparently, if you shake them just right, they can shake really fast.
I'm done. This is ridiculous. This wasn't on Lifehacker, was it?
A mouse moves its body back and forth 27 times per second, but a grizzly bear shakes 4 times per second. The tinier mammals can experience more than 20 Gs of acceleration. The larger the animal, the more slowly it shakes dry.
Shocking.
That they found that animals oscillate at frequencies sufficient to lose water droplets, and that shaking frequency is a function of animal size, as I already said. Mammals with fur, unlike humans, tend to have loose skin that whips around as the animal changes direction, increasing the acceleration. This is crucial to shaking success and subsequently body heat regulation. This story has gone on for too long. It's funny to think about. Now, here's a really funny one.
Next story.
RIAA budget shrinks nearly 50% over 2 years. Torrent Freak has looked at the RIAA's IRS filing for the year ending March 31, 2011.
The TF has looked at the RIAA's IRS filing?
For the way March 31, 2011, and HD, that the organization has faced major contraction. Over 2 years, the organization's budget has been cut nearly in half. Nearly in half. Staff numbers have been cut from 117 to 72. Two senior execs with a combined salary over $2 million are gone. Legal fees are down from $16.5 to $2.3 million over 2 years.
Oh, my God, these are the artists we're destroying.
That's an incredible drop. Torrent Freak concludes the RIAA member companies, a.k.a. the major labels like Sony and so on, aren't coughing up the same big contributions that they once made. The top earner is not interesting. The current CEO, also not very interesting. High-income employees, not very interesting, because we don't need to name individuals.
Good story, bro.
Thank you. But anyway, RIAA, they might be dying.
Next story.
No.
You don't want to do another story?
I can't. I'll fall asleep.
Genetically engineering babies. Genetically engineering babies, a moral obligation, says ethicist.
Oh, good.
An Oxford professor says that genetic screening for ethically better children is a moral obligation.
So for what ethically better children?
Yep. Trying to ensure that your children have the best or a good enough opportunity for a great life is responsible parenting. And when it comes to screening out personality flaws like alcoholism, psychopathy, and a propensity for violence, you could argue that people have a moral obligation to select ethically better children. They are, after all, less likely to harm themselves and others. So when he says ethically better, he means not alcoholics or psychopaths. As I understand it, the genetic screening, you can only realistically do that if you're doing IVF.
Oh yeah, I imagine. You know,
it's called PGD.
That might not remain the case medically for much longer. Who knows? But
except the alternative
is psychopathic tendencies a genetic thing? Can you pick that up on a screening?
I don't know. I understand that approximately 1% of the human population is psychopathic.
And approximately 50% of this podcast.
Are you a psychopath?
No.
I don't think I'm a psychopath.
You wouldn't?
No. Well, would I not? To be a psychopath, wouldn't I have to be faking emotion and empathy? I would say that I was a very empathic person. I cry at all sorts of movies. And I don't think that's something that a psychopath would do.
Oh, I wouldn't imagine so.
If we have the power to intervene in the nature of our offspring rather than consigning them to the natural lottery, then we should.
Blah, 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 slippery slope, blah, blah, blah.
The thing is that this would be, you'd figure out if your potential children had these genetic problems using something that I think is called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is something that's only done if you have embryos outside of the body, so you can actually get to their cells easily. The alternative to that is something like what's it called, where you examine amniocentesis. Which I think is done to it, not to analyze whether a child is a psychopath or an alcoholic, but whether a child has some more profound problems. Just like I think that ultrasound can be used sometimes, very inaccurately, to check if the fetus has some sort of problem. The thing is, though, that if you found that a fetus in utero had a tendency towards alcoholism, short of, you know, like a viral genetic treatment, which doesn't exist, incidentally, Dylan, in case you thought it might, the alternative is aborting that child. I don't think that ethically you can justify doing that just for a tendency towards alcoholism.
Well, no, because then, of course, the very simple extension of that is that you start to abort children to pick boy or girl.
Right.
And or, you know, blonde hair or dark hair or blue eyes or brown eyes or whatever.
I want only daughters, and I want them to be completely bald across their entire bodies.
Excellent. Good luck with that.
Actually, that's just reminded me of something that we that I noticed on that picture last week. I can't remember what her name was, Lena or something. This was with the ultra high resolution printing that they'd figured out, and peripherally to that, discovering that the test image that's been used since the, since like 1972 is an illegal scan from Playboy. She yeah. looked like a peach. You could, I mean, if you initially looked at the photo, you couldn't tell what was wrong. Put that in scare quotes. The thing that was wrong was that she was a mammal. You could see that she had body hair across her entire body. It softened her outline slightly. I think that in a modern, a similar modern image, she would either have been shaved and waxed and chemically processed and photoshopped across her entire body to the extent where she just had smooth skin and no hair on it. It's an incredible change. In a very short period of time, in terms of our aesthetic lusty desires, to go from, you know, a natural to sort of weird. How would a generation feel if they had been genetically selected to be hairless on most of their body? How would you feel if you were forced to be a certain way by the choices of your parents who were going through a tick box form?
Well, I don't know. That's a consideration as well. I think the whole idea is interesting, and I just don't know.
One day we might have a way. I mean, now you'd have to say, now the chat room has said, for instance, you wouldn't want your kids to get cancer. So if you had some way of preventing, you know, some common cancers genetically, surely you'd do that. Well, of course, we don't have a way of doing that now. But one day there might be a way. And if you can do it in utero, it doesn't introduce other problems, then of course. I mean, if you discover that there's a genetic predisposition for like a hole in the heart or something, then, I mean, you resolve that. And at the moment, the way they resolve that is with surgery. Of course, you do all of those things. But some of these, I mean, personality flaws, I mean, it might sound like I'm just being hypocritical because obviously I have plenty of my own. But personality flaws, it's not a reason to. I mean, it seems like the only alternative to having that child is to abort it. And I don't, I just, it seems, he claims that it's a moral obligation to do that. And I think that the opposite is the truth.
It seems very difficult to justify. But, yeah, there's some interesting points of reasonableness.
Hey, Dylan.
But then within the broader context.
Hey, Dylan.
Hey, Morgan.
I've only got three more stories. I really want to try and get through them because that will mean we've done like 40 stories.
You know no one has listened this far.
I know, but this is just the overflow. No one cares. I have no idea.
All right, you've got to go quick, though, because I'm literally going to... You'll hear this noise?
Yeah.
It's my head hitting the microphone as I fall.
I've got really good news. One of those three stories is the same story that I've just done, but on Slashdot. So I've actually only got two stories.
Thank God. Yeah, could you just double check the
next story.
The last stories we've already done?
Phone book publisher tries to silence critic with legal bullying. Have we already done that?
We haven't, but it sounds awesome.
You are suddenly very quiet.
Oh, I probably headbutted my microphone into oblivion.
Yeah, that's what you did. Everybody in the Netherlands still receives the paper phone book once every year, whether they want to or not. Now, but of course, this maybe has some relevance here. I don't know about you, but in the apartment building where the studio is, not long ago, in the mail area, there was suddenly stacks upon stacks, like giant walls of phone books.
Yep, you can build a fort with them or something.
Well, essentially, the whoever delivered them built a fort with them. About a week later, they were all gone from the mail room, and they were all down in the rubbish area.
Excellent.
Not very environmentally friendly.
No.
In the Netherlands, it's the same thing. Everyone gets delivered these fucking directories. No one wants them. I've got the internet. It has up-to-date directories.
Yeah, although it not has, from the Yellow Pages. Because
not from the Yellow Pages.
Not from Yellow, because their directories are somehow completely useless.
That's right. To help stop this harassment in the Netherlands, I don't know that it's harassment to receive a phone directory, but they're calling it harassment on 24oranges.nl. This chap, Alexander Klopping, registered a URL of sterftelefoongetstuff.nl, which translates to die, phone book die. And he redirected that immediately to the telephone directories cancellation form on their own website.
Oh, good.
i.e. if you went to diaphonebookdie.nl, you actually went to this place. And they, instead of not even noticing, which is what I'd do if someone was directing a URL into one of my sites, decided that actually what they should do is make legal threats and claim that he was engaging in trademark violation and that he has to cease and desist. And now what Clipping has said in reply is that he'll take the URL offline as soon as the directory providers stop shoving the equivalent of a month of advertising leaflets and 0.5% of all paper used in the Netherlands. Oh my God, is that true? 0.5% of all the paper used in the Netherlands is used in their phone directories. Well, that's this guy's claim anyway. Through everybody's mailboxes, including those of people that have indicated they want to receive no advertisements. So apparently there are legally binding stickers in the Netherlands, which is they say ja, nee or nee, nee on their letterboxes. And if you put an advertisement through a letterbox that says nee, nee, you're breaking a contract. And of course, Yellow Pages now are absolutely stuffed full of advertisements. It's really all that they contain. I remember being very excited, incidentally, Dylan. I remember being very excited when I started my first business and I was in the Yellow Pages. It was wonderful. Guess how many sales I made through my direct Yellow Pages listing?
7.
0. Conventional advertising for a web development company doesn't work very well. It's word of mouth, basically. That's how it works. Anyway, so legal threats for linking to their own page, their own form for stopping receiving the directory.
Do you remember when the New Zealand Domain Registry allowed swear words in domains? Do you remember there was a specific date that they removed their ban on swear words in domain names?
No.
There was. And I set up a cron job because I had an automated registration tool because of where I worked at the time and what I was doing.
You were SOA at a certain New Zealand ISP.
I was.
That's not a secret anymore, is it? That company doesn't exist anymore.
No, not really.
All right.
So I set up a domain name. I had a few that I wanted to grab.
Did you want to get fuck.co.nz?
Fuck.co.nz, shit.co.nz, probably cunt.co.nz, I don't remember. But I didn't get most of them. People beat me to them, even with my automated registrator thing. What I did get was fucker.co.nz. No, yeah, fucker.co.nz, which I held for a couple of years until I decided NZ domain name was too expensive. But for a little while, I redirected because for some reason it was probably poor choice considering what my job was at the time. But for a while, I redirected, I think it was telecom.fucker.co.nz to telecom's website.
I don't know how many of our listeners are doing the same, but I'm currently looking at the DNC to see who's got fucker.co.nz now. But unfortunately, it's taking a while to load. There we go. Fucker. Fucker. Who do you think's got it?
No idea.
Web Farm, the Platinum Property Trust.
That weird.
Seems a bit strange. Someone called Craig Ralph has fucker.co.nz. It was registered in 2006, and I bet you're talking about something that happened about 1998, 1999.
I held mine from, look at that. It's an adult toy megastore.co.nz. I held it from about 98 to maybe 2001.
Bondage gear, male sex toys, vibrators.
I also had drift.
Thrusting, pumping, and rotating. We've got them all.
And sex. No, who had sex.school.nz? Was that Simon?
Yeah, he also had pros.ac.nz.
That's right. That's right.
That was quite a good one.
Oh, domain names. Fun. Kind of expensive. Stupid. Anyway.
One second. Where's my button?
Next story.
Kalashnikov sales to America. Boom.
They love that. They love their AKs.
I actually quite like them as well. Even though I've never shot one, I quite like the wood furniture.
Right. A lot of them aren't anymore. A lot of them are all metal or all carbon fiber or whatever.
I think that the ones that are all black, that's basically saying, I've got a tiny little wiener. I've got a tiny wiener and I want you to think I'm scary. Dude, it's a gun. You don't need it to be also black. It's not. It's already intimidating. It's like police driving black cars.
Chrome.
It's like police having black uniforms. What are you doing? What's the purpose of that? Be visible. Don't be intimidating. Be visible. Ishevsk, the town in Russia where the Kalashnikov rifle is made, is booming. The town is exporting Kalashnikovs by the boatload to the USA. Gun collectors, quote unquote, I have added those quotes, are snapping them up. It's not collectors. It's people who want guns for cheap, because I think they are quite cheap in the States. Are snapping them up. It's likely the case that more Americans will be killed by other Americans wielding Kalashnikovs than were ever killed by Russians with the Soviet area gun. Invented in 1947, it's a very handsome weapon.
Yep.
But also terrifying. Made out of pressed steel. Very cheap and very reliable. Now, actually, I think I seem to recall that on guncity.co.nz, which I think has terrible prices, you can actually buy yep. AKs in New Zealand. But, of course, you need a particular license if you want to have automatic or large capacity magazines.
Yeah.
Let's see. AK. Let's see what we got. I know they've got heaps of the Saiga shotguns, which look similar, but obviously use the larger shells and are not rifles. And also are very hard to justify having because I don't know that you need a semi-automatic shotgun with that capacity in order to shoot ducks. Unfortunately, there's lots of parts. Okay, so there's a Norinco AK-47 you can get from Gun City CoNZ for $3,000. A Chinese-made, so it's a knockoff, AK-47 with a folding stock is $5,000. You could get a Norinco AK knockoff for under $2,000 in New Zealand. I think in the States you can get them for well under $1,000 though.
Right.
This has turned into a really weird ad for guns.
I totally
didn't
get them.
I didn't mean for that to happen. It's really fun actually though, looking on the Gun City site at the weird shit that people buy. Like in New Zealand there are companies that sell gold plated Desert Eagles. I mean, what fucking nutter buys a gun like that? And they're extremely expensive too.
It's amazing how many people make AK-47s. But anyway, you can get an AK-47 for about $500 US.
Yeah. All right, so here is a 24-karat gold-plated 50 AE caliber Magnum Research Desert Eagle Mark 19. And it is $4,299.
And you look like a complete tool.
If you buy one, you are a dickhead.
You also have to have a very specific license type to even own
that gun. Oh, actually, let me just say one other thing. If you have one, I'd love to shoot it.
Excellent.
I apologize for calling you a dickhead, but you're a dickhead. All right, let's kill this show, eh? Is there anything else we need to do? God, please tell me no.
I don't imagine so.
Hey, Dylan.
Yes, Morgan.
Fish and chats.
Sorry, the show is cancelled. Beep.
Don't forget to rewind the tape.